Wow. All right, so my name's David. I'm a Grateful Addict alcoholic. So I'm a little nervous. I've been shitting all day, so bear with me. So first, I just want to, real quick, I want to thank y'all for being out here tonight. This is, like, super important to me. This is, like, where it all began for me, and, like, I'm super honored to be in front of you guys tonight. And something I was thinking about on the way up here was, you know, you see people come in and out of the rooms constantly, right? And something I heard a couple months ago was somebody said, you know, everybody in this room right now, like, this could be their last stop. You know what I mean? Like, we can do something different right now. And, like, I truly believe that. Like, if we just make that decision to do something different and turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, like, you know, we could recover from this. You know what I mean? And we can do better. And for me right now, it's like drugs and alcohol aren't the problem anymore. You know, I don't suffer from the mental obsession or cravings anymore. I suffer from this guy up here, you know what I mean? And that's why I'm so grateful for these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to read something off page 62 and 63 in the big book real quick. I don't know if Miles is cheering me on or if he's just crying. All right, so bottom of page 62, we had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, and we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. So anyway, I'm going to start. So my sobriety date is 8/30 of 2018, and for that I'm forever grateful. I was born in Scranton, Pennsylvania, the show The Office. I was born there. I lived there for 18 years of my life. It's about north of Philly. My childhood growing up was actually, like, I had a really good childhood. We were upper middle class. I have a twin sister. I have a 20-year-old brother right now. I have an 18-year-old sister and an 8-year-old sister. Growing up, we had it really good. I went to Catholic school up until I was in sixth grade. My dad owned his own international packaging business, and my mom owned her own cleaning service and cleaned hospitals and doctor's offices. And, you know, like, everything was fine growing up. It really was. I was prescribed ADHD medication in third grade, and, you know, I started on Adderall, and I took it all the way up until I think I was a freshman in high school. So when I was about 12 years old, because, like, my childhood was good, I don't really remember much of it. I did a lot of drugs. When I was 12 years old, my mom and my dad got a divorce. My mom cheated on my dad, and I guess that was, like, I don't know, I guess that was 13 years ago, and around that time, it was, like, it seemed like it was the new thing, like, everybody's parents started getting a divorce. And so we went from Catholic school to living in, like, a 6-bedroom house and, like, a really nice neighborhood to moving in, like, the outskirts of the town, living in a duplex. When my mom cheated on my dad, it was a big effect on not just my dad, but it affected a lot of people in the area. My dad and mom were very well known in the area, and my dad did a lot of service work through family services and social services and stuff like that. And so, like I said, growing up, like, we were always a part of, like, the community, and, you know, nothing was really, we didn't go through anything bad. So the divorce was, like, where it started for me and where my life really started to change. When the divorce happened, my mom owned 1% more of my dad's company due to, like, tax reasons and stuff. And my mom had left us for 3 years, putting my dad in debt over, like, $500,000. And so, you know, I didn't really know what was really going on, other than the fact that, you know, they were getting divorced. I didn't know the financial circumstances. But my mom was actually, and this is hard for me to talk about, because, like, for so long I was in denial about who my mom really was, right? So my mom had two back surgeries when I was, like, younger, before the divorce. And, like, right at the divorce, my mom went and basically got, like, a makeover. I mean, she got, like, the boob job, the whole nine yards, looked totally, you know, just different. And so I'm listening to a baby cry. So my mom had a drug problem, right? And I don't think that she knows that today. And I'm not one to say, like, hey, I'm not one to look at somebody and be like, hey, you have a drug problem, right? But in all reality, what happened in our life, right, everything just unfolded so quick. And something happened, you know? And so my mom was addicted to painkillers and stuff. And, you know, at 12 years old, I started smoking pot and I started drinking. And my mom was the enabler. My mom was like, hey, if you guys drink here, right, in this house, if you guys smoke weed at this house, you know, my friends would come over, right? It's okay because, like, I'm here, right? You guys don't have to go anywhere, right? So for so long, poor thing. So for so long, you know, that was just like all my friends would come over every weekend. We were popular. My twin sister had a lot of friends, and, you know, it was awesome. And so my dad, on the other hand, is the complete opposite of my mother. My dad is a very strict person. He kind of didn't understand addiction before I got into treatment. And, you know, he'd just be like, well, just stop, you know, just change. And, you know, so my dad didn't really know what was going on. My dad was traveling. My dad started his own private security company, and I'll kind of get to that later. Because when I was high, I thought my dad was going to come and fucking arrest me. But that wasn't the case. You know, it was the usual, friends coming over, everything was cool, right? So we thought. My mom left us when I was a freshman in high school. And the four of us kids, and we didn't see my mom for 3 years. And, you know, when you're a freshman in high school, that's difficult. I'm a huge mama's boy. I don't know about anybody else in here, but, like, I love my mom, you know? And so it was really hard to see my mother go. And so when we moved in with my dad and my mom left, I kind of didn't want to see the truth in anything. I was just basically like, oh, mom's getting help or something. Like, I just would tell myself shit, you know? But in all reality, she left us. That's what happened. So my dad was kind of like, my dad played the mom and dad role, and he was great at it. He was an amazing dad. He still is an amazing dad. But what happened was my dad's strict, and I don't like that shit, right? I still don't like the rules sometimes, you know what I mean? And so my dad would travel on the weekends for his private security company, and he'd go, and so at I don't know, 13 years old, 14 years old, I was the one taking care of my little brothers and sisters when he was out of town. And so, obviously, we had the house to ourselves, and my brothers and sisters were younger, so I'd invite my friends over. We'd, you know, drink, smoke pot, and all that stuff. So my best friend Cole, growing up, when my parents got divorced, I really, when my mom was in town, I really stayed with him. He passed away to a heroin overdose. But, you know, I'd stay with him, and, like, his home was home. You know, my mom, when parents got divorced, my mom moved, like, 13 times in, like, 2 years. Like, it was fucking nuts. I hated it. So a place has never really felt like home, right? So going off, a lot of my story is about my mom, and you'll understand why. So my mom was kind of, I call it a homie hopper, you know? She'd go from, like, one guy to the next. At first I didn't, when I was doing my step work with my sponsor, I didn't want to say that about my mom, right? I didn't want to have to admit, like, yeah, that's my mom, you know? And so, like, I've pretended for so long. And so when I got sober, right, and I was talking with my sponsor, I'm like, dude, like, this is how, when I was doing my fifth step with my sponsor, I was like, yo, this is how I feel about my mom, bro. Like, this is fucked up. Like, I'm going to hell. He's like, no, absolutely not. Like, you're just stupid, you know? Like, the way you're thinking is delusional. And so, anyway, I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I want to get into the solution. So I started taking Roxy 30s, Percocets, in high school, me and my buddy Cole. And I played football in high school. I played basketball. I didn't start. I kind of was just on the team. I would always get emotional before games and, like, you know, like, I'd feel like I had to shit, you know what I mean? But the thing was, is, like, I had the heart, I had the passion to be on the team, you know what I mean? But I wasn't good, I didn't do shit. So, like, my story isn't like, yeah, dude, I was D1 or whatever. Like, no, I wasn't, I was just there, I put on the uniform, and that was it. You know, I suit up and I show up. That was it, really. You know what I mean? So I got addicted to Roxy 30s, and I had about a $180 habit a day. And so what happened was I was working at a gas station across the street. And so when I was working at the gas station, when people would come up and pay for their stuff, by the time they got up to the register with all they had in their hand, I knew exactly how much it was in my hand or in my head. So, like, say if they brought something up and it was like $18.30, like, I knew to give them $1.70 back, but I never rang it up, right? I was so good with numbers that I was like, you know, I was getting my side of the money, you know? And so what happened was, that's how I'd pay for my pills and shit. And this is at 16 years old. So obviously I didn't, my junior year I stopped playing sports, well, stopped being on the team, and I got really bad on these pills. And so my mom ended up moving down here to Texas, who she married my stepdad, and she had my baby sister. So my mom had a baby at age 45. And when my mom had the baby, my twin sister ended up moving down here, and then my younger sister, Natalie, ended up moving down here. And so it was just me, my dad, and my brother. Well, when I found out that my sisters were with mom, right, I was like, oh, wow, shit must be better, you know what I mean? Mom must be good. And so I was talking to my mom, and I was like, she's like, hey, sweetheart, if you come down here, I'll buy you a car. This is my senior year of high school. She's like, I'll buy you a car. Everything will be okay. We'll get you a dog. Like, and I was like, ah, sounds great, you know? Absolutely. So I wasn't going to school. I wasn't waking up for school. And my dad was like, what the hell is going on? I was like, I'm just going to go down to Texas, and I'm going to go live with mom. And I feared my dad. I don't fear my dad because he was abusive. I fear my dad because, like, he was right. He was always right. You know what I mean? And so, like, all I could say was, yeah, I just want to be with mom. And I wasn't lying. I just wanted to be with mom. But at the same time, my addiction was so bad, and my habit was getting so expensive that I couldn't hide it from my dad much longer. You know what I mean? And so I knew that with my mom, I could get away with shit. And so I moved down here, and my mom lived in Cedar Park, I'm sorry. And what happened was, is I moved down here. My stepdad is a full-blown alcoholic. He's been to like 19 treatment centers. He's still not sober. And he was drinking a half gallon of 100-proof Smirnoff every other day. So when I got down here, we had this beautiful house in Cedar Park. It was so nice. I was like, geez, like, what the fuck? I never got the car. About a month after me moving down here, my stepdad went to rehab and my mom lost the house. And so right before we lost the house my stepdad went to rehab and then like a week later we lost the house. We had to move out. And right before we moved out of the house, I was taking my stepdad's car, and so it was like a month after me being here. My sister had already lived here. I met all of her friends, and I, you know, met some buddies who smoked weed and all that stuff, and like, you know, when I was 18 in high school. And a couple of them had Xanax and Klonopin, so I started selling weed and Klonopin. It wasn't a lot. It was just a little bit. And I started taking it. And so when we lost the house, we moved into a Motel 6. And it was four of us in a Motel 6 with a baby, my baby sister. So that was almost 7. So she was 1.5, 1 year old. And a German Shepherd. And so it was fucking chaos. All of our shit is in a, you know, Motel 6, and the rest is in storage that the church had paid for. And so I'm a senior in high school, and the dropout specialist in high school ends up coming up to me, and she's like, hey, I kind of know a little bit about what's going on at home. She's like, do you want to tell me anything? And I said, no. I said, everything's good. And I was that person that, like, family comes first. Like, you know, you don't say what the fuck's going on. And you just keep it on the low, you know? And so she said, are you sure nothing's going on? I said, yeah, you know, I said, everything's fine. So I guess somebody had contacted her, like somebody that we must have been in our circle was like, hey, we're worried about, you know, David and Nina. They're living in a Motel 6. And so this is before, like, I started doing drugs. So, like, I had no idea what a Motel 6 really was. The dropout specialist ended up talking to me, and she's like, hey, we're going to test you out of high school. Before that happened, I was working at Randall's overnight from like 10 o'clock at night to 7 in the morning as like a stock boy. And then I would my senior year, I'd go to school from like 8 to 3. So like, I'm a senior in high school, I'm working overnight, and then I'm going to school, and I was exhausted. So like I told you, I was selling those Xanax and fucking selling a little bit of weed. It was like a couple grams. I wasn't fucking the head honcho or anything. So I was driving home from Randall's one morning, and I was exhausted. I was overwhelmed. I was stressed, and it was just my breaking point. So I'm going down Cypress Creek, and I fall asleep at the wheel, and I drive into oncoming traffic. And I had taken a Xanax the night before to calm my nerves. And when I went into oncoming traffic, I flipped an SUV. I was driving a 2003 Honda Accord, and I flipped an SUV. I went right under it and flipped it like 8 or 9 times. So the girl happened to be a senior at Rouse High School. I didn't have a license. I didn't have insurance, and it was in Williamson County. And so and I had a bunch of stolen goods in the back of the car, so I was working at Randall's, and we couldn't afford diapers, we couldn't afford formula, we couldn't afford dog food, so I would fucking after I'd leave Randall's, I'd go to HEB and steal shit because I don't want to steal shit at my job, you know? And so I had a bunch of stolen shit in the car and get into the wreck, and I almost... So basically, I went to jail, and they didn't know how to charge me because she was in ICU, and they didn't know if she was going to make it. And so I'm sitting in jail, never been to jail before, scared shitless, and my charge was called, it was a third-degree felony, it was called accident involving injury with a special penalty range, 5 to 26 years in the state penitentiary. And so I was put on trial for 13 months. They tried to sue me for $30,000, but I had nothing. So they tried to come at my mom. She didn't have shit. So it was kind of like prison or something else. So I got put on trial, and the school had kind of helped me. Vista Ridge kind of helped me out and was kind of like writing letters of recommendation. And anyway, I was put on probation. I was put on 5 years deferred paper, which was a miracle. And when my mom moved, we moved to an apartment. And we, you know, same thing. People are coming over. They're partying. Everything's cool. My stepdad gets out of rehab. He's sober for like a few weeks, and then he relapses. She gets evicted from that apartment. We go on to the next, right? So my senior year of high school, I met this girl. We were together for 6 years. We met senior year of high school. And she was my rock. She still is my rock. And she's in law school right now. Her and I are totally different. But she kept me out of all that bullshit, my family bullshit, and it made me feel good. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit, because I really want to get into the last part. So I'm a heroin and crackhead, okay? I shoot heroin and I shoot crack, and I loved it for so long. I ended up violating probation, and I went to prison. And when I went to prison, my best friend Cole had died when I was in prison from a heroin overdose. And so I had this guilt in my head that basically, when I left Pennsylvania, which is where he was, I didn't do anything to like help him. You know what I mean? I blamed myself for his death because we started doing Roxy's together and stuff like that. So when I was in prison, I had the mentality. I was like, dude, fuck it. When I get out, I'm going to shoot heroin. Must have been some pretty good shit, you know? And so I got out of prison, and the first thing I did was I shot heroin. My first time shooting heroin was at the halfway house in Del Valley at a place called Austin Transitional Center. And I had overdosed in Austin Transitional Center. But what happened was when I overdosed, I was in the bathroom stall, and the guard was doing his rounds at night. And I was sitting, so this is kind of disgusting, but I was sitting on the toilet, and my pants weren't down. I was just sitting there because I wanted to shoot up or whatever. And he was looking through the stalls, and he found me passed out. And so he actually didn't say anything, and he had one of the clients that were in there, like, put me back in my bed. And so I woke up the next morning, and I had no idea what happened, and everybody's looking at me when I wake up, and they're like, oh, my God, dude, like this one little kid under my bunk was, like, crying. He was like, oh, my God, I thought you were dead. So I was so scared I had called my mom, and so I was like, Mom, like, I overdosed. 8 hours later, my mom has a heart attack, and my mom ended up having health problems. She had MS and lupus. She has MS and lupus, and then she had a heart attack, and then she had another heart attack about 6 months later. And obviously, I blamed that on my use. I mean, I told her I had a overdose and she fucking has a heart attack. You know, I put that on myself. And so I get out of the halfway house and I'm on parole. And my mom had her second heart attack. And so I get a call from the doctors and they're like, hey, you're going to have to come up here. And so I get on the phone with my mom and my mom's like, hey, I'm going to have to sign power of attorney over to you. And I said, for what? And when she had this second heart attack, I relapsed. I relapsed hard. I relapsed on meth, crack, heroin, whatever. And so when she had this heart attack, she was talking about power of attorney over for my little sister because she didn't know if she was going to make it. And so it got to the point, so I went up there. Everything ended up working out. But what happened was, is when she, when I came back here, I would put a needle in my arm, and I was so angry with God, I'd say, you know, God, if you're going to take my mom, take my mom, right? If you're going to kill my mom, kill my mom. That's how sick I was. Like, I didn't know what to believe. Like, well, I couldn't tell the true from the false. You know, I didn't know if my mom was really sick. She's been a bullshitter my whole life. I didn't know what was going on, right? I didn't know if she was making it up. She had MS and lupus, you know. I didn't know what was going on. So I literally looked up, and I said, you know, God, if you're going to take her, take her. And I didn't care. Nothing fazed me. So, obviously, crack, heroin, continued down that path. Came here the first time. I didn't really do shit the first time I was here. It was kind of just like a little summer camp, you know. I think I would like rap with the guys and like, you know, go to meetings and dress up and pretend like I was doing something. And I'd bullshit my counselor. You know, I'd be like, yeah, I really don't think, you know, Johnny is really doing what he's supposed to do here, you know. You know, I know how to play the game. I know how to manipulate. I know how to bullshit people, right? But, like, addicts and alcoholics, we know, like, when somebody's bullshitting, you know? And so I had relapsed when I got out of here. So I was actually going to recovery event. We would go and, like, shoot pool. We'd go to the hookah bar. And, like, my buddy who's here, he'd be like, hey, bro, you all right? And I'd be like, yeah, dude, I'm good, bro. You know what I mean? I'm good. And, but, like, I literally, like, thought I was cool. I thought I was good. You know, I thought nobody knew. So finally, leading up to the events, to when I got here 15 months ago, so I had relapsed, got clean for, like, a week, Then my mom, like, was like, fuck it, you're coming home for a week. You know, you need to get removed from that shit. And I was like, okay. Second I get off the plane, I see my mom. She hands me an Adderall. She's like, here, this will help. I'm like, yeah, you're right, it will. Feeling like shit. So, I came back, and, I'm still with the same girl. I'm still with Heather. And we have an apartment together at the time. And I come back from my trip with my mom. And she was at work one night. And I was like, hey, can I just have, like, you know, $20? I need to go to a couple meetings. You know, I need to fill up my gas tank. And she's like, yeah, absolutely, you know. So that $20, I went out. And I don't know what the fuck happened. I was out for 3 weeks. So what happened during those 3 weeks was I would call her and I would say, you know, if you don't give me this, I'm going to die. If you don't give me this, I'm going to fucking kill myself. You know what I mean? Like, I was nuts. I was crazy. After she was like, no, I'm done, I'd be like, all right. And then I'd manipulate her more. All right, so I need about $400. I need to get into a sober house. I know this guy, he's going to get me in. And she's like, all right. So she sent me $400. I went out. So I was living off of Anderson Mill, and I went and picked up dope. I literally couldn't find anybody, and I drove all the way out to Kyle to pick up some dope. Like, that's how desperate I was, you know? So I get to Kyle, and I pick up the dope. I don't know what happened. And so basically, I went into a parking lot off of Slaughter. No, I was at the Walgreens off of Slaughter. I'm sorry, because I had to go pick up some syringes. So I'm sitting in the parking lot, and I end up overdosing. Well, when I overdosed, I've overdosed like 3 times, but this last one really was kind of the wake-up call. So when I overdosed, a dad and a son, so I guess I was so eager to do my thing that when I got to the parking spot, I never put the car in park. I just kept my foot on the brake and started doing my thing, right? So when I overdosed, obviously my foot fell off the brake, and I hit a wall at Walgreens. So a dad and a son, it's actually kind of fucked up. The son was in a Boy Scout uniform. I had found out later that he was in like a Boy Scout uniform. I was like, oh, that's a good adventure for him to go on, you know? And so they find me in my car. They call EMS, and I didn't wake up for 6 hours. I don't remember it. I do remember. So I guess this is like my white light moment. I was in the ambulance, and all I remember is there was like a young guy. He must have been like fresh into the field, and he was like, he's not gonna make it, he's not gonna make it. And I remember I woke up like 6 hours later, and I was handcuffed to the bed, and there's this lady screaming in the room next to me, and I thought that we were in a car crash together. Like, I had no idea had no idea I overdosed, nothing like that. I didn't know what happened. So anyway, I called Chris. So I went to jail and I called Chris and I was like, dude, look, I'm going to die. Like, I'm going to die. And so he got me in here in like 4 days. The wait to get in here is ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's absolutely horrible. And I remember calling the front office people and I said, like, I was sick. I was sick. I was sick. And I would crawl to the toilet, and I'd literally just call and be like, hey, like, I'm literally, like, face on the toilet, like, please, like, I will not shoot this heroin anymore, like, please help me. And so I forget who was working in there, but I ended up calling Chris, and I got here in 4 days, and they called me, and they said, you know, just don't use. And I was like, I can't. And so what happened was I don't know what it was, but I had this thing where whenever this overdose happened, like that was it for me. That was it. And like I've not had a desire to drink or use since then. And I've been clean since. Now obviously through the steps, so when I got here this time, I really did the work. Sorry, I have a sore throat and it's getting horrible. So when I got here, I did the work. By the time I left here, I was on step 8. I was only here for like 28 days. And I really started doing the work. And so a buddy of mine that I was in here with, his mom owns a special needs ranch with special needs kids. And so when I got out of here, I started volunteering and working with kids with special needs. And I made a 3-month commitment to it and I ended up doing it. I've been doing it since. I love it. And I've really grown to love these kids. Well, they're adults, but you know, I've really grown to love these guys. So, since I've been clean, I've been to jail twice. Dealing with like wreckage of the past, no license, suspended driver's license. Nothing that has happened to me is worth getting high over. Nothing. Or drinking over. Nothing is worth getting high over. You know, I don't know what it is, but I had the fear, like, I have fear of drugs now. Like, I'm like, fuck that. You got me fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, when I hear people go back out, I'm like, that's insane. Like, this life that I have today is amazing. This is amazing. You know, obviously, so I'm 14 months clean. I got my 14 months was a few days ago, and like, I would have never thought I'd be here today. Like, I would have never thought it. I didn't think I'd be up here telling my story. I didn't think that I'd be working in treatment right now. You know what I mean? I work in drug and alcohol treatment, and I love it. I absolutely love it, and it's what I want to do. Like, I absolutely love helping people. I love it. It's what keeps me sober. It's what keeps me going. I had gallbladder surgery like 4 months ago, and I didn't use any prescription medication. I had a root canal, didn't use any prescription medication. My girl of six, so obviously through my addiction, I was a piece of shit, right? Clearly. My girl cheated on me when I was 3 months clean. And my sponsor told me, he said, you can do one of two things. You can forgive her and move on, or you can forgive her and stay with her. But those are your only two options. And, you know, when I got sober, I thought that she had to be sober. Right? I thought that I thought the whole world was going to get sober. You know what I mean? I was like, well, the party's over. You know what I mean? But that's not the case. That's not the case. And, you know, I really value my life today. I really value my life. Like, I seriously wait. Like, this morning my car didn't start. I was like, hey, if that's the worst thing happening to me today, I'm doing all right. You know what I mean? Fuck it. I was 5 minutes late to work. I was like, fuck it. You know what I mean? But like, I don't even get mad anymore. Like, I really don't get mad. Like, I just laugh shit off. Like, I use comedy to like fucking make everything better. And like, life's not bad today. Life is not bad today. I want to finish with a few things. You know, for the people in here that are in treatment, right? I've been here twice in 6 months, right? I've laid down three really good friends in the past 5 months. And it's a revolving door. Everybody I get close, it doesn't matter. Like, if I get close to somebody in the rooms, like, you never know. You know what I mean? You never know when you're going to see him again. You know? I did a 12-step call for my buddy. He actually went to treatment here. And I had to fly back to Pennsylvania. I was like 6 months sober. I had a wedding to go to. And I get a call like 24 hours of me being there. And they're like, hey, such and such passed away. And I literally was with him like 48 hours before he passed away, trying to help this guy and get him into treatment. But like, I can't carry that with me. You know what I mean? It's not my fault, you know? And that's the thing. Like, I can't control what you do. I can't control what you do or you do. You know what I mean? I can only control what's inside my hula hoop. You know what I mean? And I could barely control me. You know what I mean? So what's important about this program for me is that this is a we program, right? I don't have to do this shit alone anymore, right? I can go to anybody in this room and I can say, hey, I need some help. And they're going to help me. You know, regardless of if it's the help that I want, you know what I mean? They're going to help me, you know? So anyway, did I do all right? Yeah. I need that ego boost. I need you guys to stroke my ego for me, you know what I mean? Yeah, well, I know, thank you. No, but seriously, You know, I was actually, so I wanted to touch base on this and I'll close. Like, I was nervous coming out here, right? I was in my car, I was listening to some Chris Brown, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing, you know? I was getting in the mood, and I was like, I'm going to fucking tell him my story. Like, I'm not going to make love right now. So then I put on the Jackson 5, I put on that song, ABC, you know? And I was like, yeah, it's going to be easy, it's going to be great. And then, anyway, I was just flipping through different genres of music. It was horrible. So I, like, silenced the radio, and I just sat there, and I started talking to God, right? Because here's the thing. God's got me, but I don't got God all the time, right? Yes, I put God first in my life every day, right? But when shit starts going good in my life, I'm really quick to forget about who got me there, right? And so I got to give it to God every day, right? This isn't me, you know? The person that I am today is totally not who I used to be, you know? And, like, that's the miracle behind this. Like, everybody in this room right now, like, it's a miracle that we're all sitting in here. It really is, you know? And, you know, I was running on self-will all day today is what I was doing. Oh, man, I'm so nervous. You know, I wonder what they're going to think about me. Well, who fucking cares what they think about you? You know what I mean? At the end of the day, who cares? You know? I'm not losing sleep over it. I might have lost sleep last night, but tonight I'll be all right. but yeah, like I gotta give everything to God, man. And it, like, the concept for me is not that it's not that hard. It's really not. Like, if someone said, "Hey, this book right here is gonna change your life, and you're gonna stay sober." You know what I mean? And I'm, like, totally in denial, and I just put this down, and I keep relapsing. Like, I'm delusional. I'm fucking crazy, right? And so by doing this, right, and getting honest with with people, and being an honest human being, getting, you know, and getting real, you know what I mean? This is the life I have today. I'm sober. I'm fucking crazy, but I'm sober. You know what I mean? And I couldn't do this without y'all. And I really appreciate it, so thank you so much. Yeah.